life, this show. Hello, welcome to the big show. Yeah, we're here to do all the stuff on the techs, all the big stories, and we've started an hour earlier than planned because Bart Buschatz was going to have to leave early, so we've pulled it forward so that he can get in here, but he hasn't replied saying that he's definitely coming at the earlier time, so he might not actually show up till 8 o'clock, so this could backfire horribly. Oh, mate, we've got four other stories before we get to Bart, and Alistair, not even heard a peep out of Alistair, so who knows? Oh, hang on, we've just had a message from Alistair, just popped up in the Slack room. Sorry,
can't
Ewan.
Can't make it.
That's okay. Don't worry, Dabsy. Thanks, man. So we're just waiting on Bart, but we're not going to wait for him. We're going to start, and then we'll do Bart's story when he gets here. Don't cross the streams, he says. Joining me, absolutely fabulous bunch, starting us off. The man himself, the guy from Boulder, Colorado, Jeffrey. How you doing, mate?
I am doing wonderful, and I'm so happy to just be here with all of you awesome people.
Yeah, I think we're going to move the, because the thing is, 8 o'clock was always the time that was put because of the fact that we had the Mac show at 4, so we had a bit of time to go and get a curry, but I think we're going to move big to 7 p.m. now, because that's the time it used to be on. Are you well, mate?
I'm doing well. And even though we still have these massive forest fires going on, the winds have shifted. So the air is clear. We can see the sky again. Our wildlife has come back. Excuse me. So,
well, the wildlife's come back into the streets and started eating the family dogs.
The wildlife has come back into the streets. Yes.
Oh, dear God.
So I don't have to watch for the mountain lions right now. Excuse me, but the bears.
So the local ethnic restaurants are short on the local animals for the park.
Yeah, well, their business, or at least their inventory, should pick up now.
Excellent, mate. Good. Glad to have you back. And someone else who's been a while. I hope you got a note, mate. Atlee, how you doing, buddy?
Not bad. How you doing?
I'm all right. You haven't finished your wall, then?
No. Unfortunately, but because of the summer and all the stuff going on with COVID, things got a little sort of sidetracked and hard to get the electrical contractor to come in. Well, actually, the person from the electric corporation, administration for the province to come in and do the inspection because they're so backed up now that things are starting to get better and get back to running that I can't close up the wall until all the electrical has been inspected.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's what I'm waiting on.
Are you well?
Yeah, been doing very well. Insanely busy, but yeah, very well.
Insanely busy. There's low end of people have been insanely busy through COVID when you thought it'd go the other way.
Oh, I know. I look at all these people that are saying, oh, I'm so bored and I've got nothing to do. I'm like, oh my God, I have not been busier. It's been quite insane.
You could chuck them something.
I keep trying, actually. There's a couple projects that I've been working on getting other people into, so it's been pretty good.
Next to him, Patrice, how you doing, Mrs.?
Doing good. I'm very happy that BTN is on.
Yeah, thanks for doing the new time. Yeah, no, we're back. We're doing all right. I'm going to have I've got HS2 starting soon, so we might have a few weeks where there's a bit of disruption, but it should be pretty much back to normal. We're just going to split the shows, though, because two in one day was knackering me, so I'm done. Are you well?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Like, everything is happening at the same time right now, but, yeah, I'm happy.
Good. Excellent, mate. Last but by no means least for the moment, anyway, someone else we haven't seen for a while. Howa!
Hello!
How are you, mate? I haven't seen you in ages.
I know. Just been mad busy. Picked up a new contract that's been keeping me busy and doing a lot of WordPress stuff. So, yeah, it's been quite interesting.
No, excellent. How's Auntie Pamela?
She's fine. I haven't spoken to her in a while, though, now that I think about it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I need to post a call.
Give her the BTN love.
I will do.
We haven't seen you or her in ages.
I know.
Bart Buschatz is going to join us, I'm sure. Because he said he would be here at 8, so he might come in at 8 with his story. he's going to get away early anyway. We've solved his problem one way or the other. So the week in tech, let's kick it off then. Who's going to give me the first story? Who's going to say the biggest story? You can't. Bart wants to talk about something to do with Google and Apple coding, but I don't think anyone's probably going to have that story, so we'll probably be all right. Jeffrey, you were fastest finger, I think, there. Start us off.
How did I manage to be fastest?
I'm pretty sure you were. Yeah, Jeff, here you go. Alexa, yeah. Amazon Alexa for residential will let the voice assistant power apartment complexes. Wow.
Now, I'm categorizing this in what could possibly go wrong. So this new Alexa product that Amazon just announced allows landlords to install Alexa into their properties. So you can move into an apartment, and even if you've never had voice assistant technology available to you, it can just be built into your apartment, and you don't have to have a special account to use it. And so on one hand, that sounds kind of cool, because you can, without having to do anything other than move into your place, have a smart home and voice control. The product, Amazon says that your landlord will not be able to listen in on your conversations. So you'll have privacy with this, but your landlord can customize your Alexa experience.
Oh, go on. So, that's got to be worth discussing a bit further.
Yes, so it can do things like remind you that your rent is due, or if there's other things that your landlord decides that they need to tell you about or alert you to, they can just have your A-lady in your apartment start talking to you. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, first off, to assume that landlords won't find a way to listen in on their tenants is kind of crazy, because someone will figure out a way to do it. But then also having a system where your landlord can start pumping messages into you without your control sounds absolutely awful.
You know that somewhere some landlord is going to figure out a way to have every time someone comes into their apartment, Alexa starts up with Rihanna's "Bitch Better Have My Money."
So now you've discovered one really good use for this, because that would be kind of funny. But still, this sounds like it has the potential to be a privacy nightmare and a horrible intrusion into people's lives as landlords start sending messages like all the time. Hey, don't forget rent's due in a week. Hey, don't forget rent's due tomorrow. Have you paid your rent yet? You better pay your rent. Or hey, turn down the heat. You're using too much electricity.
Yeah, I don't know if this is I can't see that Amazon are going to code into this thing something that potentially intrusive. You might have an automatic turn the music down function or something like that, because that's one of the big problems is the residual noise in apartments, that kind of stuff, isn't it? So you'd see that there'd be antisocial behavior measures that could be put in here. The reminders for rent and so on, yeah, okay, that seems good. But, I mean, most people pay off a direct debit now or something there, don't they? So it's not, I don't know, it's just, you know.
There's an assumption here that all landlords are emotionally stable and reasonable people. And granted, there are a lot of them out there that actually are that. And I'm lucky that I live in a place where the property management company is really good. But there's a lot of people that are living in places where any sort of interaction with their landlord is going to be bad. And so the potential for abuse there, I see as a big problem, especially since as the tenant with this built in to your apartment, it's not like you can turn it off. Also, there's got to be an Echo Dot is what, $34. So if you really want to have your own voice control, $34.
Yeah, but this is a paid for service, isn't it? So Amazon is selling the service to the residential landlord. It's not a free service, and it's something that has to be bought into, I guess. So there's going to be a charge then from resident through the landlord for the use of it, and there's got to be a right to say I don't want it. But I can't see it doing anything else other than providing a functional service that will enhance the living experience of the people. Because if you're saying that there's bastard landlord out there, yeah, that's fair enough, but they're not going to sign up to Amazon systems, are they? They're bastard landlords. They don't paint the hallways, and you know, they're never going to invest in something like that.
Well, in cases where they'll be able to annoy their tenants and go after money and have one other way to, you know, reach out to their tenants. The bigger thing is that this is literally a ploy to help harvest more information.
Well, that's what Amazon's...
And get someone to pay them for the right to do it. We want you to have all these people's information, and we're going to pay you a monthly fee so that you can do it, because you're going to give me a couple of relatively crappy options because of it.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole experience with Uber is about the data, isn't it? It's not about the taxi ride. It's about where you've gone, exactly. Where you've been, yep. Where you're going to.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, is the landlord would have that information. Your, you know, what you do, what time you've come home, when you leave, when you're not around. Some of that might be useful because you would know when the place was empty for long periods of time. But otherwise, yeah. It's sort of like you know everything, like what time I've come in every night.
Yeah, I don't think landlords, there's no way there's going to be abilities for landlords to listen into this and take in auditory information about stuff other than Amazon taking the general trend information that's anonymized and that kind of stuff.
I just realized there actually is a loophole to that.
Oh, go on.
Because you can, as a tenant, link your own Amazon account to the Echo system. So in that sense, Amazon now gets paid twice because they have the landlord paying for the service. And since you have Prime, you're paying for it as well. But what if your landlord sets up a dummy account and then pairs that to the Echo system? And now they have their own separate account that's accessing everything that you're doing.
So it says here that... that there's an ability for the tenant to pair their own account, but they can also then reset it like they could reset any other device. So when you move in, you could reset the account. So even if the landlord has done that.
I missed that part where you have a way to reset it yourself.
Yeah, okay. They can unlink their accounts at any time, and the in-unit devices can be reset along with any other smart devices that the apartment holds when the tenant then moves out.
So that's good.
It allows residents to manage rent, maintenance requests, amenity reservations and more. So the specific Alexa skills that are being built for this to function in apartment blocks.
Well, one of the places that this is coming to first is in Denver. Maybe I can find a contact at one of the companies that are property management companies that's using this. And get to see how they're using it.
Yeah,
I honestly want to see the video of the first time some stone guy in Denver realized his apartment stock.
Of course, yeah, because it is legal there, is it not, the backy?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you and your arguments, I think, are all valid. And at the same time, I would not feel comfortable moving into an apartment that had this service built into it.
I just don't see that. I don't feel any threat at all from the smart home devices that we've got. In fact, they absolutely enrich my life. And particularly now, we're coming up to a period of time you know, when we hit October, November, where I'm going to roll over in the morning after the alarm goes off and say, hey, lady, turn on the studio radiators, go get in the shower, and by the time I get down here, the studio's piping hot. And I value that so highly.
Mm-hmm. Plus, and also, I am so with you. I mean, I have a HomePod, an Echo, and a Google Home in my living room. There's an Echo Dot behind me here in my office, and then there's another one in the bedroom. And I'm doing voice control stuff with my place all the time. I'm using automation systems to make my place work for me, and I absolutely love it. But I also love it because at any time I can choose to simply unplug everything if I wanted to.
Well, you can do that with this.
What I mean is I have absolute control over the system. And I'm totally willing to admit that my distrust of this new system that Amazon is introducing is irrational. I can live with that. For some reason, I am just not comfortable with this pre-installed service.
I mean, you can opt out of it and you can turn it. I mean, this thing's going to be an Echo on the table that you can then turn off. So, you know, it'll be on a power socket. You can clip the power lead, I'm sure. Pull it out from the back. There's going to be... I can't see it.
It depends on how it's installed. I mean, if these are built into the walls...
I don't think they will be.
Yeah, my assumption is they will could be built into the walls.
Yeah, that's my assumption would be that they would be built into the walls in certain parts of the apartment.
Yeah, the Echo Bee I had in Phoenix had an Alexa built in, and that was clearly built into the wall. I couldn't even use the AC without it. I mean, well, I could turn off Alexa, but it was still there.
Yeah.
No, I think this, the smart home is something that's here to stay, and there are so many positives around this. I struggle to see the negatives.
Well, I'm going to see if I can get one of the companies in Denver, to show me what they're doing, and then I'll report back.
Muller's suggesting that you Luddites are losing the geek crowd now in the show. Couldn't agree more.
Who is?
The only negative I can see is it is not smart right now.
You'll run away and get your tinfoil hats, and me and the other geeks are going to carry on loving it.
No. I'm all for technology and I'm all for advancement, but I think that's the problem is that we've got, we're not regulating any of this stuff. Too much information is getting siloed. Too many companies have, or too few companies have too much information about us in general, and we're already seeing negative outcomes because of a lot of this. And I think that we need to sort of look at this a little bit more closely and with a more critical eye before we just carte blanche add new things to these, the way that we're doing these things. I think we just, I'm not saying don't evolve the technology, don't expand the technology, but we need to start putting some checks and balances in place. It's obvious what's happening to our society without them.
Yeah, no, there is a definite need for that. But I, at the moment, I do exist. Google, a bit less. Amazon, Apple, I do believe are privacy oriented. So I don't distrust that. And it is. I think all of them are collecting data, but they're all collecting anonymized data. And data is the new gold. That's the trouble, isn't it?
You know, we all assume that it's anonymized data, and they all say it's anonymized data, but we've all watched over the last 50 years of how honest corporations are when it, you know, suits their interest to not be.
Well, and I mean, even if they're honest, they think it's anonymized until someone figures out how to de-anonymize it.
Well, exactly. Yeah, and the thing is that, and that's the other big thing is that, yeah, it's anonymized per feature, but you attach enough of these features together, you give me enough anonymous facts about a person, I'll end up telling you who that person is. Right? It's just a matter of calculation, and trust me, those people have the machinery to do it.
I struggle with that.
I understand but the thing is we've got to find that middle ground. And I'm not saying that we need to be all tinfoil hats and everything. That's not where I'm saying at all, and that's not where I'm going at all. What I'm saying is we have to go somewhere away from being just, you know, herded like sheep in one whatever direction the corporations want to take us. And you know, somewhere between that and the tinfoil hat, closer to the sheep, but not, you know, far enough away from the tinfoil hats that we're not looking at things objectively.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, go with that. Have you not got Alexa built into your studio now, then, Natalie?
No, I'm building my own.
Your own voice control system.
The whole thing, yeah.
So you're going to be
the hardware's for
Starship Enterprise.
No.
Computer. No,
is it a neural net?
Yeah. If you don't have Major Barrett's voice for your voice control system, I will be so disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
That would be hilarious. I wonder how I'd be able to get enough samples of it.
No, may have John Cleese.
John Cleese would be better.
I want Sarah. Do you guys? Have you guys ever seen, what was that show called? Where they had Sarah, the like house, the smart home.
Oh, I know it's funny, but I don't remember the show.
What's that called? The show called. But that's my dream house, basically. And people are probably screaming at their phone, their headphones right now. Like Eureka, that was the show.
Is it Eureka? That's it. Yes.
Yeah, Eureka, that was the one.
Yes, yes, that was hilarious.
Yeah, I want that house.
Atlee's
story then. Walmart and Microsoft are bidding to purchase TikTok.
So Microsoft is already been made no secret about the fact that they're looking to buy TikTok. But also so is Amazon and so is Google and so is like everybody's trying to buy TikTok. Right now, and it seems to be this war to get this, because it's got lots of new people's information. The companies like Amazon and Microsoft want to buy it primarily. Actually, Amazon or Microsoft just wanted to have a minority stake in it, with the idea that they would put a lot of money into it and then have the TikTok platform move to the Azure system, so that way they could say, hey, TikTok runs on Azure now, your company, obviously we can handle that, we can handle your company. It's almost like a big advertising step for them. Plus, some revenue as well.
Is it already running on it? I know that they're hosting a lot of stuff on either Amazon or Azure.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where it's hosted. I haven't been able to find that information out. But the idea was to have them basically exclusively be on Amazon or on Azure. Amazon wants them for the same reason. They want to have them on their AWS system, right? So they want to host it there, and then Google wants the information because Google wants all the information. It's one of the reasons they just bought Fitbit too, right?
So.
For Walmart, it makes sense because they could buy themselves a captive advertising platform.
And that's the thing, right? So I think that they're looking at it with, they would put it on Amazon or on Azure. Microsoft would get that Azure exposure from it. Walmart would get the captive advertising platform. And TikTok would get sort of stability in financing and also a North American or a Western core that would help them circumvent some of these other claims about being part of China and all of that stuff, all of those issues that come up there. But the question is that this is another one of these giant sales of a huge platform with tons of information on millions of people, and companies are bidding for it with very little oversight.
Well, and I'm assuming TikTok isn't all that excited about this anyhow.
Mm-mm.
Because this isn't about selling the whole company. This is about
just the USR.
Their US presence and an executive order that could turn out to be ruled as what would be the right word? Not inappropriate, but outside the scope of Trump's authority.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't the CEO just leave the company because of that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd been there what, like 3 months, and then was like, "Yeah, screw this, I'm out."
But they're suggesting that the U.S. arm is worth between $20 and $30 billion.
Yeah.
That's crazy. absolutely crazy money.
That is insane money when you think of the valuation of companies like Facebook and things like that.
Well, that's where you, because you're not selling a service that gives you income, so the money's got to be in the selling of the data. It can't be anything else, because there is nothing to buy.
Yeah. Exactly, and that's the thing. That's where I keep saying that we're passing off these free services that everybody's paying for with their information, and these companies are gobbling up these services and amalgamating them to give them more and more and more and more quantifiable information on everybody.
Yeah.
And then this is, like I said, the story sort of goes into what I was saying about the last one is, we need to start looking at this. It's just like we won't let the telecoms all be bought up by one company. We won't let the oil companies all be bought up by one company. How about information needs to be treated the same way?
Yeah,
it is a commodity. Yeah. It is a renewable resource. It is a commodity that we have that, you know, if one person controls it all, we're going to end up in a situation like we have with diamonds.
Yes. It is popular, though. My daughter walks around the house like she's dislocated both hips on a constant basis. And I'm kind of like, Bryony, what are you doing? And she says, TikTok dance. She's got all of these dances that she's got off TikTok. But like I say, when she walks around the room, it's like she's got a severe neurological disease. But there's her and billions of other children are doing the same, or millions of other children are doing exactly the same thing. It is a popular platform. And it was interesting.
The part is that it's primarily used by children. So this is children's information that's being sold. We're selling the information of these people's future.
Yeah, no, but, yeah. Well, yeah, yes and no.
I wouldn't say
it's
just children.
No, but
yeah,
the thing
I was going to say, it's not just children. I've got a few older friends that are on there quite a lot.
It's still a
huge amount of children. It's many more children than are focused on any of the other social platforms other than, say, Instagram.
Have you actually gone on and looked at the variants of stuff that there is on TikTok?
Yes.
Because there's a lot of stuff on there that's not safe for work. And and there's a lot of stuff on there that's kids doing stuff. There is that is safe for work, but there's a load of stuff there as well. You know, if you look at, I got a meme that kept coming up in Instagram, and it was on one of the games rather that I downloaded, or it was advertised on Instagram, and it was a girl advertising a song for Little Mix, and she was just, where our new song's out, get it on TikTok. Download it and use it for all your TikTok videos, and it's basically, we've made a song, we've effectively made it royalty free. Have at it, do what you want with it on TikTok, it's fine, as long as the music's getting out there and getting played. We actually don't give a stuff, and the people have really switched on to the benefit of TikTok as a marketing tool. It is superb the way that they're doing it. I am hats off. They totally get the way of you know, give it away and people will buy it in their droves. So
now I'm thinking maybe I should set up a TikTok account so that I can do TikTok dances for people.
Mate, I would pay for that. I would pay for that. Absolutely. You could do that as a Patreon-only account. JessTikTokDances.com. It might be available on TSO.
Is that domain
host.
Available?
Well, we'll have to check on TSO host later.
Right.
Oh, dear Lord. Who's got a TikTok account? Howard?
Nope.
No one here has got a TikTok account. I haven't either.
I actually wanted one, but I haven't gotten around to that.
No one that has one here will now admit it anyway.
No, I would admit it. Like, I mean, my daughter is on TikTok quite a lot. I mean, we don't like it, but I can see it in the stats. Like, she spends probably, like, there's Discord and then there's TikTok. Like, those are the top two, like, of her apps.
Yeah.
Mate, we look at this, the next story Patrice has put in. We've got the proper tinfoil hats on tonight. Bloody hell.
I saw this story, and since, like, I thought I would do something good for Alistair again, because, like, last, you remember last week I picked the AI story? And he picked it up for his block.
Well, I'm also aghast at the two unchivalrous bastards here who've jumped in and gone first and not let the ladies go first. How dare you?
Oh, well, I'm to be fair, I'm not on the chat room, so I'm going to have to pop it.
I'm sorry, I don't see gender. I treat women as equals, so if they're not fast enough to... back.
Hey, I've got an edit now. 30 minutes, Jesus. You don't say that word.
So as I said, for taking one for the team and making me look better, even though I was rude and jumped in with the first story.
Right.
Nicely done, sir.
Well, next week we'll be holding the metaphorical story door open for the girls first. right then, Patrice. Give us your tinfoil hat story.
Yes, totally. There's a new AI application. Like after peanut butter and banana sandwiches last week, we have anti-procrastination smart glasses that use AI. There is an Indiegogo campaign where you can order them. It launched today. The idea is very simple. You wear them and it tracks what you're looking at, like what websites you have open and what apps you're working on and whatever. And I mean, easiest one is at the end of the day, you can see what you've looked at and like how much time you spent on Facebook or whatever. Looked at your phone.
I like how you said "or whatever."
Mm-hmm. It can probably even alert you and say, "Hey, you're spending a lot of time on Facebook or on TikTok, and you actually were supposed to do work."
Mate, this is a Black Mirror episode.
Kind of is.
Right there, it's a Black Mirror episode.
And Jeff's story are both Black Mirror episodes.
It's like the one that I think it was in the first series with a guy where you could press your temple and wind your eye back with the thing of everything you've done for the whole day.
Yeah, something like that. Like I said, I don't know whether it's going to work. As I said, it's an Indiegogo thing. Like I have my doubts that this is going to work at all. but I mean, well, you never know. Maybe someone really smart figured something out that nobody else has. So I just found it interesting that we're coming up with all those, in my eyes, stupid applications for AI. Just put AI anywhere and just... Just put AI.
AI lately has seemed like a solution in search of a problem.
But this hops back to the fact that you need different people on those AI teams because then you might get different sorts of solutions and different things that they come up with. So
we're starting to see a very...
This sounds more like someone needed a solution, like had AI and wanted to build something with it, and just that was the only thing I could come up with. Like Jeff should probably build an AI for the for his cooking, like for deviled eggs.
The horror show that would be, you know, you make your kids wear these so you can check what they're doing online.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You know, Bryony, you watched 23 hours of TikTok yesterday. Please, go to sleep, for God's sake.
Yeah, but your brother watched 17 hours of porn.
Yeah, exactly. Ellis, less Pornhub, please, man.
Do you really want to know that? I don't know.
How big is your Pornhub wedge?
there's a title for the show.
I mean, as usual, like the goal for this campaign was like 8,000 euros. It shows it in euros here. It's probably like whatever, $9,000, $10,000.
How much are the glasses actually costing then?
It says 250 here for the launch special. Retail apparently 400.
There's got to be if they're doing machine learning, there's got to be a subscription in that for the data crunch, surely. That seems ridiculously cheap.
Yeah, well, and I'm assuming at that price, it doesn't include the lenses. It's just the frames.
Just the frames,
It says here single vision prescription and non-prescription lenses.
Oh, okay.
So they offer that probably as an upgrade, I would guess.
Well, wow. So I need to go and get my Hoyer lenses transferred into these. I mean, the actual lens itself takes no part in the data production, does it? Mm-hmm. So you could buy these and not put any lenses, or just have plain glass in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So what do? You get to a certain part of your day and you're like, sorry, I can't work right now because I have to charge my glasses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it does have a charging port.
Yeah, I mean, it's how long you're just walking around with a big mega charging pack on your belt that you're constantly plugged into the back of your head.
Putting in.
Johnny Mnemonic style.
Well, the fact that you can buy your glasses in a two-pack.
Monster helmet for the battery.
Yeah. That's a good idea. I'm trying to see if it says, no battery life. Nope, nothing about that.
Under the case would have a charging point.
Battery pack in no time.
Yeah, no, that bothers me that there's no underestimation of battery life, because that would be significantly debilitating. I mean, what was Google Camera or Google Glasses like?
Like 6 hours or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, you never got a whole day out of them, did you?
No, not even nowhere close, yeah. That was one of the big failings.
But you can buy these in a two-pack or a four-pack. So that tells me that you probably need more than one pair a day, since you can have one pair charging while you're using the other.
The other one.
And you've got
to... And then swap out when the battery is low, and now you're charging the other.
That's a non-starter for me. My glasses cost me $1,400.
What? And you paid $1,400 for bright red glasses?
No, orange, first of all.
Right. Yeah, no, well, it was bad enough at red.
The frames were only 300. The lenses were the rest, 1,200 or 1,100. So it's $1,100 for my lenses. I'd have to put $1,100 lenses in two or four pairs of glasses to get through a day. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, same. Yeah, my lenses are stupid expensive as well.
Well, you wouldn't need it. You wouldn't need these on all day every day. You could put a normal pair of glasses.
But that gets rid of the whole thing of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. That wouldn't
work. The idea is to track what you're doing all day. It's like it's basically like a Fitbit for your.
So this habits. Isn't this is tracking when you look at normal people in real time, not just when you watch a screen, or.
I mean, it seems to be more focused on screen things, at least what they mention here. I mean, I'd read the entire thing. But I could see it also tracking other things. I mean, what's the difference? Like, if you're walking around, I mean, you could say, I don't know, you spend X amount of hours at an Apple store.
But then there's got to be GPS on it. Mm-hmm. Is the GPS on this so it does location?
I don't think so. But, I mean, you could track that with vision. Like, just look at the signs. Like, not that difficult.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, do a text to an OCR on the street signs.
Not even that. You could go to an Apple store, and if you take enough pictures of the Apple store, you could identify which Apple store was which.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I mean, that's what machine learning does, right? It takes all the nuances of all the photographs and matches them together to identify the specifics.
Mm-hmm.
Just also wondering if you could. If there was RFID or a QR code there somewhere, your glasses could scan that, and that's your location scanned.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of possibilities for this. It actually does have some sensors as well. I think was it a heart rate sensor and I think a pulse ox.
I'm looking at that diagram right now. It has a pulse oximeter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing then is it's saying that The on the graph that they've got here, it's decidedly computer oriented, tech oriented. Mm-hmm. It's not. There's a bit of a sports wedge on it, but it's like productive versus unproductive work, and there's none of that. So whoever this person is, for that entire day, they didn't talk to anyone, according to this.
But I think that's probably the beginning of it. It'll be much easier to choose the elements that are easily trackable and easily teachable to the machine learning. Generics of teaching individual people and individual normal life situations are still quite obtuse.
I was going to say that we don't track the interaction with people because it's too friggin' hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's too obtuse for what machine learning is really capable of right now. And I think that in order to get this off the ground, they're probably looking at very simple things. Are you looking at Facebook? Are you looking at Twitter? Are you on your computer? Yeah. Does it look like you're doing work stuff that can be recognized as work stuff? Are you doing things that are recognized as being historically non-work oriented or whatever? And it's just picking those. It's sort of A/B right now. And then as it evolves and as it gets more and more data, you got to remember, though, the whole time that it's doing this A/B testing and giving us the information on these very specific slices of what we can do, it's collecting all the other data because it's now teaching the machines how to recognize all of that and how to use that information. And that's where that capability is eventually going to come from. And that's what we would have to do in order to get that level of machine learning, is to gather that kind of copious data on all of these generic things and then teach the machines what they mean.
But this is where I'm going to call you lot out on this, because you've been talking about the fact of selling information via Alexa or via Google or via other services as abhorrent, and they're all bastards and, you know, have at it. And then you're saying, well, actually, no, these glasses are collecting loads of information, but that's absolutely crucial to improve the machine learning.
Well, no, I didn't say it was the right thing to do, though.
Well, no, but that's the connotation of the tone of your voice, Attlee, was like, this is justified. And that's what I'm thinking, you know, if collection and use of information is about improving service, it's about not about controlling the population, it is all about improving service.
Yes. The problem is, so all I'm saying is that, again, this is another one of those features that we want to have the right kind of checks and balances in place to make sure the information is being used for the science of it, for the science of improving these features and improving these abilities and these technologies, and not being purely harvested to sell personal private information down the road for whatever gains the company can see fit. Now, the big problem with that is, how do you fund the collection of all this data without, you know, doing the harvesting? Like, we end up into a slippery slope there here, and all I'm saying is that we need to start looking at this as a society in realizing that we have to take some responsibility on what we're doing. We're all just wild westing it through this right now, and we still don't know what the ramifications of this are going to be for the kids that we've been giving away all their pictures on Facebook from their whole infancy right up to whatever. I'm expecting that in about 15, 20 years, you're probably going to see a spate of lawsuits where kids sue their parents because of sharing their personal information online without giving them any ability to say yes or no to it.
I think that's going to fail, but by the way, I'm not saying the lawsuits will pass.
I'm saying I think we'll see a whole firing of those at some point.
Yeah. By the way, the site or the Indiegogo campaign at least says the processing is done on your phone, so I'm guessing it's connecting to your phone, and it is discarded after processing. So the data doesn't leave your phone. At least that's what they're saying here. Whether that's true or not, we'll see about that.
So that now means you need 4 pairs of glasses and 4 phones.
And 4 phones, yeah.
You need a phone with a hell of a battery life. It's processing machine learning information all day long. Welcome to the being part of the hive.
Yeah.
You know, based on what they're doing here and the way they're doing it, I could see at some point, assuming what they're doing actually works, I could see... Apple just quietly acquiring this company.
Oh, that could happen, yeah. I could definitely see that.
I could see actually more likely that Apple will just see what they're doing, do it, and then kick them off the store.
Well, that's always
a good point,
too.
Actually, because they've revealed their code, haven't they?
The engineers or any patents, just buy them up real quick, and away you go. Apple does have an MO for... seeing what someone else is doing and then doing it themselves.
Yeah. Yep. And then kicking them out. Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, they like, we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. No.
Apple thing.
More tin hat stuff. Let's get off that.
I'm pretty sure the whole show's been tin hat.
Oh, well.
I do have a story that's not tin hat. I've dropped it into the Skype chat because I can't access
that. I can't access that, so. That's on a different computer entirely.
Yeah, put it in Slack. I'll put it in the
I'll put
the
it in
chat.
Slack.
If you're listening, just talk amongst yourselves while I wait.
This would be a good time for a
Please
show.
Hold. Well, yeah.
Let's do it. Actually, let's do an ad.
Some good music.
Let's do the advert, and we'll come back to
Howard. Is always the song that people go to for that.
It's a quality song, mate. It's classic. It's classic elevator music, isn't it? So,
I think it's the single most recorded song in human history.
Yeah, and it's and it's only been recorded in Brazilian and English, hasn't it? So, Portuguese and English. Mm. Thanks to TSO Host for supporting British Tech Network. We'd be lost without them. We do say this every week, but we do mean it. They give us all of the bandwidth. They give us the two big servers that host all of the stuff that we've got. Righty, if you haven't seen it, you've got to go and look at the blog, because Righty made a little film about the last 13 years of BTN and what's been going on with it. Pictures of me that look like I've taken a rapid aging pill. From 2008 to now, I have aged badly in the last 12 years. But it is absolutely superb. Well done, Righty, for doing that. If you want to watch it, it's a great wheeze. And there's also one of Jeff's best bits on there as well, which has got the CES remote control sex toys thing and everything. It's brilliant. Now, we couldn't host that. We couldn't put that up. Righty couldn't have got all of that footage at a drop of a hat without going to the server and looking at all the shows that we've got. All the video shows, all of the audio shows that we've ever done are all online and waiting for you to go back and watch a few of them if you really want to. You can look at pictures of me when my hair wasn't white and I looked like Santa Claus. Thanks to TSO for that. Now, you can buy stuff off them. Your offer code's BTN20. And is Bart.
Right on time.
Hello, mate. We're doing the adverts and then we're coming back to the stories. So so if you can support BTN, then you can go to TSO Host and get your hosting stuff from them. But what they really want from you is the ability for you to come through and say thanks at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech on the socials. Just do that and that's all they want. They want the brand recognition, nothing else. You must get out there and do that or we're knackered. The other people that we've got supporting us is iMenMax. They are a really cool firm here in Birmingham. Anything with an Apple logo on it, they can repair it, plain and simple. If you've got a legacy machine that Apple won't touch, fear not, because iMenMax will look after it. If you've got an old machine that's sitting working as a doorstop and all it needs is an SSD and a bit of a memory upgrade, pass it off to them, they'll do that. And also, if you've got any parts or any old pieces of tech that you're not using, send them to, or give them a call and send them to iMenMax. They'll give you a price for them because they'll use them as donor parts for other people when they come to get other parts machines done. They do refurbished machines as well as, you can get a nice little machine to do for the kids' schoolwork and that kind of thing. And also they do data recovery. And if they can't recover your data, they don't charge you. They're absolutely awesome. They've recently done an iPhone for a chap in Hawaii. So he was a friend of Doc's. The Doc told him about iMenMax. Fortunately, he worked for an airline, so he got one of the pilots to donkey his iPhone over here, send it to iMenMax. iMenMax have fixed it, recovered all the data that the guy thought he'd lost, and now they're just trying to figure out how to get it back to Hawaii. But they're a great firm. Please, please, please use them. Again, get yourself out on the socials. Thanks at iMenMax for supporting that British Tech, because a lot of you are using their service as well. We're their third highest referrer now, so really proud of that. Well done, BTN, and thanks for supporting the people look after us. Bart, how the devil are you, man? You're on mute. You're still on mute.
So not doing that well.
You're still on mute.
I'll interpret for him. I'm doing great, and I'm so happy to be here, and I'm excited about everything that's going on in my world. By the way, I'm beautiful. Can't you tell? I believe that's exactly what Bart's saying.
I've been gone for a while.
Jeff,
I had to go.
You're wonderful.
There we go. Easy.
I got you back, my friend.
There he is. Oh,
if you use Loopback to clean your audio, you have to turn it on.
Good lad.
Yes.
How the devil are you, Bart? We ain't seen you in forever.
Oh, God. Where to begin? It's been a 2020, hasn't it?
It's, oh, mate, it's a year to forget, without a doubt.
Well, for me, it's going to be, if everything goes to plan, a year to remember and forget. I may end this year as a homeowner for the first time in my life.
Oh, wow, cool. Congratulations.
Or I may not. So it's been a very, very mixed year of much, much stress. But hey, we're here.
Excellent, mate. That's good. That's a positive. Are you well? Are you fully recovered from your bike accident stuff?
Yes.
I know that was a while ago, but I know it was taking you quite a while to.
Yeah, I don't advise getting run over by a van.
No, I never would.
Yeah, no, it took quite a few months actually for the ribs, because I bruised my sternum, and that breathing is apparently important. It takes a long time to heal because you can't not breathe for a week. You know, if you could, it'd heal much more quickly. But no, I'm over it by now, but it really took me till April or May, I think, to get over that.
As long as you didn't figure it out on day three, you're all right.
Oh, I tried to plow through it and then ended up in A&E and was then told not to do that.
Yeah, no. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you're well, mate. That's excellent.
Cheers.
We thought we were doing the right thing tonight because we know you've got a hard out at 9:15. So I said, what about if we move the show an hour further forwards and then you'll be sorted? So we moved everyone. Everyone said yes, apart from you. So
that's because I was out on my bike for the previous 3 hours. Making sure to be home by 8.
Yes. So what we've done is we've done three people's stories. We've got a Howard story to do. We'll do your story, and then we will finish a little bit earlier than normal. So.
Oh, sweet.
Best of both worlds, mate, really. Sorry.
Well, apart from the fact that I am not just fashionably late, but unfashionably late.
No, it's my fault. It's fine.
Because you were trying to help me.
You were perfectly on time. Don't worry about it. Right, Howard, talk us through your story, girl.
So, I don't know how many of you realise, Nokia is 20 years old now.
3310 is 20 years old.
Wow. It's 20 years old.
And I remember that
this
phone.
This took me back, remembering that phone, exactly.
I had that phone.
Yeah, I've got one upstairs in my cupboard.
Was that the one with the clip-on front covers where you had a whole industry about getting fancy blingy covers?
You could probably.
Yes, I think.
I don't think it was this one. Was it this one?
And you could get all different kinds of custom buttons for it, because that whole keypad was just a little membrane that came out.
Yeah, that's right. But was it this one though? I was saying that
she's
not.
I don't think it was this one.
I think it was the 30.
3410.
3410, maybe. Yeah, I think it was the next one.
I could have sworn I owned a 3310.
Yeah, I say I've got one right now. I know exactly where it is upstairs in my my cupboard in our bedroom, and it's in like a crap drawer. You know, like everyone's got a crap drawer in my crap drawer, along with a compact palm thing. But it was a cracking phone. I mean, it was one of the first phones that revolutionised the. You know, it was the smallest phone around at the time. It had longer battery life. It had a game on it, Snake. God.
Oh, Jesus.
I miss Snake.
Oh, my God. I forgot.
And it was like,
yes,
get onto the slow whap.
And if you dropped it, the battery popped out.
Yeah, all the pieces had just come apart. Yeah. It was like someone built a phone out of Lego bricks.
Yeah, it was the 5110 I was thinking of with the clip-on fronts.
5110.
And you can still get them on the internet on eBay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think you could switch out the front on this one too. I'm pretty sure you could.
Well, it probably, as Jeff said, if you dropped it, it came apart. So if you got, you know, it's like you could take the front off one and the back off another and put it together. That's doable.
Well, I used to drop the phone while cycling and the battery would go left and the phone would go right, and I'd put the battery back in, the phone would boot up again, and all would be grand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it worked. You never cracked the screen or anything like that, did you? And the battery.
This did make me think, though, given how long this has been around, is how long we would have the iPhone and Galaxy, Samsung, and all of those phones, how much longer they would last as a name, given that, I mean, Nokia was quite big.
I mean, they brought out a lot of these, ilk, didn't they? Mm-hmm. But people still had the 3310 for an extended period of time. You were talking about, if you bought it outright, you were talking about 600 or 700 quid to buy it outright. 20 years ago, they were expensive phones. I remember having an Ericsson T61, and that cost me £700 to buy out of contract.
Jesus, like in Ireland, you just didn't buy out of contract. That wasn't a concept. I think I got my Nokias for 150 pound or something.
Yeah, and but you paid for them for 3 years. Yeah, or something.
That was on contract. 12 months. I remember getting
this. Yeah, some of them were 12 months deals.
Yeah, we couldn't even buy the orange contract back then. So, and your phone bill didn't go down once the phone was paid off. You just perpetually paid for the phone.
Oh, that's still happening in Germany, for example. Oh, they're still doing that.
Tom says these phones on analog call networks were brilliant for phone calls. There's an innovation for you. A phone that's actually brilliant for phone calls. Clarity-wise, they were superb. And they were. They absolutely were, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to remember. I had one Nokia phone after that, and it was like one of those like rugged, outdoorsy phones, but I do not remember what it was called.
There was one that had like a rubbery grip on it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just don't remember what it was called.
And then I had the one that was the one out of Matrix, the first proper WAP phone. Where you...
Yeah, that's the one I was trying to think whether this... Oh, but it's not the 8850, is it? It's a different one.
I always, always, always wanted the 9110, and I could never afford it. Which was basically this fold-open keyboard contraption. It just looked so futuristic and supersonic. Yeah. So I guess in some ways I got what I wanted with the iPhone at last.
Yeah, a family friend of mine, he had it, but he worked at that point for Nokia. So he worked. He was actually the manager for Europe for Nokia. So he had every one of them. So I've seen them all.
Nice. They did release the 3310 again because I've got one for my parents. Batwench bought it and sent it to me. I've got a coral orange one that she sent, and it's still numbered as the 3310. It's got a full color screen on it, but it's not a smartphone. But only you can't, you know, there's no touch screen on it. The games are very, very Symbian kind of looking games. They're not. It's not a smartphone by any stretch of the imagination.
And that was the didn't they do that for the anniversary or something?
Yeah, that's right.
It's the anniversary model or something.
And it runs Android, but in actuality.
Yeah. I'm now stuck in a world of nostalgia here, trying to remember my three Nokia models. My first one was the 5110, and then I got a 3210, and then the last one I had was like the 3210 but had a color screen. And then I went to an iPhone, which is kind of amazing to think of that as a jump.
That's a leap.
Yeah. I jumped from that, whatever that ruggedy Nokia was, to the iPhone, to very first iPhone.
Yeah, I went from a BlackBerry Curve to an iPhone. Nah.
I think I had.
I went from a Sony Ericsson, Motorola Razr.
Can't remember which model.
Oh yeah, the Razr, that was good, and there was a straight version of the Razr.
Razr.
Nice. I actually went from the Razr to the iPhone and used the iPhone for about 2 weeks, and went back to the Razr.
Yeah, Americas. I mean, the Americas. I've always had a fascination with fold-out phones, though. It's Star Trek communicator kind of thing, and it's just like it's like I can't own a gun, but I can have a phone that flips out, so that'll do.
You see them to this day in TV shows, like there are NCIS.
Yeah,
for example,
they still have them.
I reckon there's a market for my 3310 that I'm going to be able to sell it to TV shows, retro TV shows.
Probably, yes.
In a few years, you can have my 3310 for your prop, but it's £1,000 a day, man.
You know, now I'm feeling like I should have kept that 3310. Also, my Sony Ericsson T610.
I got them all in the loft. I've never thrown them away. I've got a Texas Instruments laptop that I had God knows how many years ago.
Texas Instruments.
Yeah, no, I've got. Actually got a Texas Instruments calculator watch up in the loft.
Wow.
Yeah, one that you could. Didn't come with a stylus. You couldn't push it with your fingers. Yeah, to think if I could find it and work it now.
It's pretty funny to think that smartphones didn't actually outsell these feature phones until 2013, the last quarter of 2013.
Yeah.
That is shocking, actually. Because when you think about it, in hindsight, they were such junk.
From now,
Yeah, but that's how long it takes for, like, how long people, or like most people, hang on to their phones. Especially if they were like feature phones and they like didn't need anything else.
And also, I can't remember how much were the phones when they came out, the like the iPhone and stuff. I can't remember how much it was.
That was $699, wasn't it?
No, $499. Well, US, no, $499
for the small one and $699 without. you bought it without.
Was it $199 with contract?
$699 when you bought it without.
Could you even buy the first iPhone without? Didn't it only come with AT&T?
Nope.
It was only
in the beginning,
AT&T.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. The first iPhone that I bought was the original iPhone, and it came out of contract, and it cost $699.
Well, in the UK, but in the US, it was definitely only AT&T. No,
it was $699 in the US. Mm-hmm.
I think mine was the US.
You had to jailbreak it.
Which I still have somewhere with a cracked screen.
It was $2 here. But you could still buy it outright without going on a plan. It was $699.
Mm.
Yeah, my first iPhone wasn't an iPhone. It was an iPod Touch because you couldn't get an iPhone in Ireland. And I so wanted that goodness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I still have this fond place in my heart for the iPod Touch. And I keep thinking about replacing mine with a newer model, because mine is stuck on, like, I want to say iOS 9.
Jeez.
That's still pretty
blast from the past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just double checked. It was $499, as I thought, on AT&T in the US originally. So with a contract, it was $499.
With a contract, $699 without. Thank you. God, I love being right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Elephants never forget, Trace.
Well, I remembered it correctly, too. I was just talking about the US.
All right, then.
How long did you have to wait in the UK? Did you get it, like, 6 months after the US? Because you didn't get it on day one, did you?
No, you didn't get it day one, but it wasn't long after.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we ever got the original iPhone in Ireland. Maybe you did. I didn't get one until the 3G.
The 3GS. The 3G and the 3GS came out pretty quickly. I skipped the 3G and went to the 3GS. So.
Yeah, I think in most of Europe, the 3G was the first one. I think Germany had, like, for a very, very brief time, like a couple months, they had the original. But the 3G was, like, the first one that was widely available.
I've got a 3GS down here, and it still powers the Apple Hi-Fi that I've got.
I think that's absolutely awesome.
It still works, and the sound quality on it is absolutely amazing. I played it down here with Richard Hartness and made a little video of it and stuck it in the Slack room. It was incredible quality. Really, really good. But the only problem is I can't get it to charge the phone, so you've got to put the phone on. When the phone runs down, that's it. The pass-through is not working on the lead. So again, I've got to give it to iMen Max and get them to fix it, along with the pile of stuff I've got down here from the last time they visited, to get them to fix that as well, which I've never taken over.
Yeah. One day you'll just drive a truck to iMen Max and just...
The thing is, it's you look at, like, your parents, and you think about how the world has evolved from them in their infancy, or, you know, junior years, to you, and, you know, they're out of touch. And now, you look at my son, if I showed him a Nokia 3310, he'd go, what's that then? It's a phone, son. The type of phone we use. Or if you take him back to the bricks, or, you know, the Gordon Gecko kind of phones that were out there, and what's that then? It's a phone, Ellis. That's the original mobile phones. Okay.
It's great fun to ask a young person, why is the save icon that square thing with the little square?
Yeah. You know, I had to explain that to my nieces.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. The the other thing as well is, like you say, it's what people did, you know, because before cell phones, we had landlines. And I was just, what's a landline?
Yeah.
Because we haven't had a phone line at our house for 10, 12 years now.
Yeah. The concept that you would have to arrange a phone call. Oh, I have to be home at 5 because, you know, my aunt is calling from Belgium or whatever.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
I think that if I had teenagers now, young teenagers like 12, 13, I would actually get them a smartphone and then have it affixed to a box on the wall like an old-fashioned phone with a long cable. That would be the only place they could use the phone. And just let them have that for a couple of years like that.
Wow, you're getting me ideas now, like from my oldest daughter. We're gonna have to think about it. Oh, that would be good.
And do you remember having to actually make plans to meet people, and actually having to stick to them?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you couldn't reach them to change your plan.
Oh, I'll message you in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to be fair, when I was a kid, at least we had answer phone. So me.
No, we didn't.
when I was 15, I could ring up James and say, James, are you coming out, mate? Are you coming around the house? And I'd be able to leave a message and he'd call me back and leave a message then for me.
Yeah, so. Sure. The cell phone would have that too. It'd just be strapped to the wall.
No, you're saying about arranging meetings and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And you
remember that. I remember
how many tapes did you have for your answering machine?
One, it was a little tiny tape, wasn't it? And it only had 15 minutes of record time on it, and then you had to flip it over. Yeah.
Yep.
And then collect calls. I don't think I'd know that.
And then probably about 2000 was when, or, you know, 97 to 2000 was when you got solid state ones, so you could actually record relatively infinitely. There was and there was no tape to record to. It was all just electronically coded onto a chip.
But you tell that to kids these days and they won't believe you.
What a marvelous age we live in. Yeah,
do you remember when maps were paper things that you could unfold but never refold?
Yeah, and they never actually helped much either. So let's not get too jittery on about it.
Wasn't on it yet because it was built like 10 years ago and the map is 20 years old because your granddad gave it to you.
That was the big problem, yeah.
Do you remember A to Zs? I've still got an A to Z in the loft.
I still have one. I always keep one in the car in case anything happens.
What's an A to Z?
An A to Z was a book, and it was...
It's like the Rand McNally thing.
Yeah, A to Z of Birmingham. So it was fairly big pictures of the cartography, if you like, on a page, and it was about A5 in size, a bit bigger. And my house was on page 55, and that only covered about a quarter mile around my house. So you had to then, and there'd be an arrow pointing off that would go 56, and if you went up, it would go 94. Yeah. When you went down, it would go 78, or that way, it would go 35. And there was no logic to where which page it took you to.
Yeah.
It's like if you went left and right, it was sequential. Yeah. But when you went up and down, that was just like, whoa, that's off the charts. That's too hard now. Someone would have sat down. We need someone to dial in who used to do the pagination for A to Zs, because there's got to be an algorithm to work that out, because it was horrifically off. It was just like there was no logic as to what numbers it was sent
to. It would have been rows, right? Like, I mean, you would have had the whole big map and you would have had to cut it into rows, and then sequentially you would have gone across.
I don't know.
Jumping up or down.
No, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember the first CDs with mapping software, or even like the first mapping online mapping solution where you could like plan your trip to whatever Birmingham and then print it out?
And then you get lost. If you ever went off script, that was it. you were literally lost, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, literally. Well,
you had no map for it. You had nothing. You just had
about 2000. I got I had a laptop that I charged up, and I came over on the plane from Amsterdam to Detroit, and I was working in Grand Rapids on the west side of Michigan, but I got family in Detroit, so I thought I'm going to stay in Detroit. I hired the car, went out, and to get to the family. I'd never driven there by myself. They'd always pick me up at the airport, but I had to have the car to go on to Grand Rapids the following week. So I got this little tiny GPS unit, which was about, I don't know, the size of a coaster, and that plugged into my laptop by a USB. And you had to try and perch it somewhere on the dashboard, and it would pick up the stuff. And then there was a piece of software that would direct you. And I'd paid like £100 for this piece of software and bought the pack for America for it. So I left Wayne Airport. And it's like, right, here's I'm going. And it was great. I got a dotted line all the way out to where they were, probably about a 20-minute drive. And then all of a sudden, the line just stopped advancing down the road, and it just went perpendicular through some woods. I was like, what's that? What? So it only did, like, major routes. So it got to here, and it was just like, right, okay, this is as far as I go, mate. Just park the car and walk through the woods, eh, for about a quarter of a mile, and you'll find them. And there's no street, no local streets on there or anything. You just like you can't explain that to someone now. You know, you go back to the Apple sending people off bridges and cliffs and that kind of stuff. Nothing compared to GPS in the late 90s, man.
For years, the new bypass near our house wasn't on the GPS from Garmin, and so you'd be driving on the road, and it would say, do a U-turn, do a U-turn, because as far as it was concerned, we were in a field.
Yeah.
No, we were on the new road, but it was just utterly, utterly perplexed. And it, because it was right outside our house, it was every single trip ended with, do a U-turn, do a U-turn. No.
This Belgian's not for turning. But we've waited long enough for you, mate. Give us your story.
I hope I can have the one I wanted. So what I was going to talk about is Google and Apple giving a very
Mate, no one's discussed anything this close to intelligent on the show so far tonight. So it's all yours, pal.
Good. So like joint API has been pretty good because I've been running it now. Ireland was one of the early countries to adopt it. So I've had it running for months now, I think, and it works well. But the Irish government had to write an app. And much to my surprise, they did a good job. It's open source. It's on GitHub. It has a really nice UI. The privacy section is written by someone who understands what a human being is. And it's really simple language. The app's interface is clear and concise. It just kind of works. Really surprises me immensely. But as of the latest version of iOS and soon to be the latest version of Android, governments no longer have to write an app. This is going to be baked into the actual core OS. And the only thing the governments are going to have to do is basically provide a config file that tells iOS or Android what servers to talk to. So they're still going to have a back end to receive the notifications and stuff. But they won't actually have to write an app. And so hopefully, at long last, that means that the 40-something U.S. states that have nothing will finally have something. And I believe, finally, the U.K. app is in beta again on the Isle of Wight, so maybe you guys are getting close to one as well.
We got close to one before, but the problem was that, as with all government projects, the goalposts kept moving. I actually know someone who was writing on for them, and the government were told at the start, this will not work.
Well, actually, there was a story just last week. The Australians are still on the road the UK was on, like pig-headedly refusing to accept the reality that the only way that you're going to get iOS to actually keep listening to Bluetooth in the background is to use the bloody API. They found that they're having between 27 and 41% success rate. I'm like, I'm actually shocked you've managed to get 27% of it to work. Given that you've pig-headedly refused to use the API and that you know this is going to fail. So I grudgingly admire them and think they're the stupidest idiots out there and putting people's lives at risk needlessly.
I don't know how much we're putting people's lives at risk. And I know that the track and trace system has been around since the 50s because it was my mother was a health visitor in one of the local villages. And she would get information through from the STD clinics, and she'd have the job of ringing up X person because someone had gone in and got tested positive for asexually transmitted disease, and then they'd have to fill out a list of all the people that they'd had sex with, and my mother would go and make the phone call and say, do you know this person? Yes. Well, they've probably given you something you don't want. And that was the way that track and trace works. And it worked really, really well. But, the new track and trace stuff, I think I've got a bit of a fear of the fact that it's because of the fact, it was an easy connection to make, I agree. But this one, it's just like, if you've been in the same building as someone who's had it, then we're going to presume you've had it. So therefore, you've got to go into quarantine. And that's where I think it falls flat because every time I've gone...
Quite an accurate description, though. I mean, I guess you could have a government that implemented it that way, but that's not quite what the app does. I mean, it's a tool for you to decide if you want to go get a test.
No, but at the moment, if you go into a pub I played golf in a charity day the other week. They took my telephone number, my address, they took all of my details, and I'm like, well, hang on, there's a bit of how are you managing the GDPR on this, mate? Because this is a piece of paper that you're writing my name on. That ain't particularly brilliant. But literally, if someone said, right, okay, I've got COVID, then everybody on that list was assumed to have it, regardless of whether I'd even sat in them. There was no timings on it. There was no understanding of whether I'd sat in the same proximity of them. It's just like, right, there's an exposure. You will be isolated.
Right, but what you're describing is the not app system which is way worse than what the app will give you.
I totally agree, but I'm worried about what the app does. In the whole preface of that was, I'm worried about what the app does in terms of track and trace, because if you're not careful, the sheer proximity will trigger the, and it won't take any account of things like masks and that kind of stuff. You could end up with isolation without cause, surely.
Right, but it's not about isolation. It's about, so maybe it's different in the UK, right? Ultimately, the API is a tool, and it's up to your government to choose how to deploy that tool. But the way it works here is that it's called exposure notification. It's not called track and trace for a start. So it doesn't pretend to do track and trace. We have track and trace in Ireland. It's done by human beings like your mum.
Yeah.
And that continues to exist. This is on top of that. This is not a replacement. This is on top of that. And it's called exposure notification. And it will just tell you that you have been within 2 meters for more than 15 minutes of someone who has tested positive. And it will offer you a free test. And you then decide, do I want to take that up?
But if you don't take the test, does it then report that you should be isolated?
No, because it doesn't know who you are. The government has no way of... There is no... It is only a tool for you to avail of free testing if you want it.
Oh, well, that's good.
That is it.
That's
it
good.
Can't be used to beat you. It can only be used to help you.
No, that's excellent then. But so there's no accountability of the individual.
Right, it doesn't
even
put
your
an
own
onus
device.
On you. You don't, by installing the app, you don't take on an imposition. All you get is basically the opportunity of knowing more and of a free test should there be a possibility.
Okay, fair enough.
So it's basically you win and you don't pay anything. You well, don't I, take I, on a responsibility, you don't take on... Exposure is the wrong word. Like you don't take on any sort of, you don't have to do anything, but you have the opportunity to know that you've been in a danger zone and to action it with a free test if you choose to.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it works in most of Europe.
Right.
Because the whole point is Apple and Google put so much work into making sure that it's decentralized and anonymized that it can't be used as a bludgeon to beat you with. It can't become the China style, you have to show a green app to get into this building. It just, the data isn't centralized, which is why the Australian government hate it so much, because they can't use it to spy on people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then in the United States, they're just not using it.
Yeah, because it involves effort. Yeah,
not even California, because there are no tech companies there.
Like Apple or Google, maybe.
Yeah.
What, 6 states have apps at this stage?
Yes, maybe
six. I thought it was 5 a week ago, and I thought there'd been one more since.
That's totally possible. I'm not watching how many states are adding support that closely, because it's pretty clear Colorado isn't going to be one of them, which I find surprising because of how progressive we've been with trying to just manage all of this.
Well, Alabama's one of them, which I wouldn't, like, if you'd asked me gamble 50 quid on which states will and which states won't, I would never have said, oh, Alabama, they're on the list of yes, but
I agree completely. That's a big surprise.
Let's not get into a Forrest Gump conversation, but is that because of the politics of the region?
I would have told you that because I know a little bit about the healthcare in Alabama because we had a customer there. And they have a pretty good group of people there that manage all of that.
Cool.
So that's probably why. Like, there's some sane people there in the right positions.
That makes sense.
There's some sane people there.
I was looking at it just from the... Mm-hmm.
The few sane people that Alabama has. Aren't there?
Yeah. The same people in Alabama are few and far between. In other states, I mean.
I was trying to think, I've been down in the south and I've met some amazing people down there. Nothing like the stereotypes. Wonderful, wonderful people. But I don't think I've ever been to Alabama, so I can't say that firsthand, but I'm sure it's true.
I've never been to Alabama either.
It's like any other part of the southeast United States. there's a culture of friendliness that is wonderful, but then at the same time there's this really mean part of that part of the country, and a lot of that has to do with racism.
Yep.
And the reason that everyone's so friendly down there is because they just don't know who's armed.
So we
stayed in we went on holiday around the 2000s period, actually, and we spent a couple of weeks with my family in Detroit, and then we spent a couple of weeks with some friends in Texas, and we were both it is so much more friendly in Texas than it is in, because we'd heard all the horror stories about, you know, Texans being independence sufferers, you know, the guy on the plane when we filled out, are you a U.S. citizen? Hell no, I'm from Texas. And we thought it was going to be quite belligerent, but it was completely the opposite. I mean, you know, Michigan was a lot more sour-faced and a lot more introverted than Texas was. And talking to me mates, I was like, God, you know, why is it so friendly down here? Because no one knows who's armed.
Well, I mean, Texas is very mixed because I'm trying to remember the name of the city where the university is in Texas. It's actually Austin. Extremely progressive.
Austin.
Austin, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my cousins went there.
Mm-hmm.
Austin is a very fun place.
Yes.
And then I believe it's Houston that has an amazing arts scene, which you wouldn't expect because because of the cultural blends that you have there, you wouldn't think that it would have this huge art scene. And yet, it's like a destination just for that.
Houston is a beautiful city. I fell in love with the place. I loved it. We were there for 2 weeks, as I say. I've never met such a sprawl, though. I mean, we drove 70 miles to play a golf course called the Houstonian from Houston. We were still in Houston after driving 70 miles. And like, people there are like, so what, you're in the next city? Well, a city in America is not the same as a city in, because you get the city of X and it's only a mile across because it's got its own policing department and things like that. You know, I'm like, no, if I drive 70 miles from Birmingham north, I end up in Sheffield at 70 miles and I've passed through Derby and Nottingham in the process. It's you know, I've gone through two more major conurbations. And we hadn't even left Houston.
I spent a couple of weeks in Maryland as a student, as a sort of a researcher visiting UMBC. And our daily commute with the person I was staying with to UMBC, if I had been living in Belgium, it would have taken me to Holland.
Yeah.
And as far as she was concerned, she was just commuting from the edge of DC to another part near DC. She didn't think it was a big commute. And I'm like, no, I'd be in a different country if I tried that in Belgium. And in Ireland, I'd be halfway to England. I'd be on the Isle of Man or something. It's mm-hmm. such a different scale of which explains the car culture quite well.
Yeah, the other thing is as well, just going to the store or going to the mall or something like that, you know, why don't you guys walk? Well, because it's you know, the shops are so far apart, there isn't a conurbation mm-hmm. where all the shops are concentrated and that kind of stuff, unless it's a physical mall. It's a different culture, entirely different culture. Mm.
Yep. I live close enough to a local grocery store that I can walk. It's still like a 15-minute walk to get there, but I am definitely an exception. Most people do not live in a place where they can actually walk to their grocery store.
I can freak most Americans out by saying that I got my driver's license at age 39, and I didn't really miss it very much before then.
Yeah, that would really freak people out.
Yeah, now, the other end of the spectrum, I learned how to drive at 12 because it was necessary in case something happened to my dad when we were out in the mountains and he couldn't drive. I needed to be able to drive the Jeep. Mm-hmm. And then on my 16th birthday, my parents drove me over to the DMV because I already had my driver's permit, but they wanted me to have my license as soon as I turned 16 so that I could start driving my sister and brother around. And so wow. At the other end of the spectrum, there you go. It wasn't even an option. I needed to have a driver's license.
I could drive a tractor at age 14 if that helps. I just never had a license because it's Ireland.
Now you see that's some serious cred right there. Seriously.
Yeah, I did that too.
Excellent. Good story, mate. Time for the cool thing then, because we haven't got any adverts to do, because we've already done them while we're waiting for Bart and Howard to do their stories. So, do you have a cool thing for us, Bart?
I do.
All right.
Sort of a COVID-inspired. It is the Desert West USB-C hub. And the reason this thing, I'm so happy with it, is because it's become really hard to get a USB-C docking station that doesn't rely on Thunderbolt. Because I have a MacBook Adorable, which means, it's USB-C, but no, it has no Thunderbolt capability. No, it has no DisplayPort capability. So I needed power pass-through, because there's a grand total of one hole in the side of this laptop. I needed Ethernet, and I needed 4K HDMI, and I needed enough USBs to make up for the fact that my one and only port was blocked. And I'll put it to this way, I got great use out of Amazon's return policy, trying a whole bunch of different adapters from a whole bunch of different companies that all claimed to do what I needed. And the only one that actually worked is this one from Desert West, which I'd never heard of before, but they've actually made them like the same color as silver as all the Apple stuff. It's actually really nice industrial design. And it's also the best value for money. It's a whopping £24.64 on Amazon.co.uk today.
Nice. Desert West USB-C hub. $24.99 here, yeah. All the same thing.
Nine in one multi-port adapter. It's amazing. So it was the cheapest of all the options, and it works better than any of the other ones I tried. And goodness me, I tried plenty. So I'm just so impressed. And this yoke has powered me through almost the entire pandemic since we switched to working from home on the 13th of March. I remember it being Friday the 13th. And I got this, you know, a week or two after that, and it's every single day it drives my entire workflow for work. So it's definitely been put through its paces, and it works an absolute treat.
I'm just trying to show a picture of it before we bugger off so that people have got an idea. There you go. So it's got SD card reader, micro SD card, Ethernet port, and a whole pile of other stuff. Is that an HDMI as well?
Yeah. So what I really needed it for was the HDMI, the Ethernet, and the power pass-through. And enough USBs to plug in my keyboard on my external hard drive. And it has that. And it does actually have the SD card and stuff, which I've never used. I'd forgotten they were there. And one of the USB ports is a fast charge port, should you want to fast charge your iPhone or whatever.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. One of the guys here has got an issue, so I'll his USB hub is crap, so I'll get him to have a look.
There you go.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Next up, Jeff, what have you got for us, mate?
Well, since The Boys Season 2 launches on September 4th on Amazon Prime, my pick is the Omnibus Volume 1 for The Boys, which the Boys is based on the comic book series. And so getting to see where this TV series got its inspiration is kind of interesting, and it's really well written. I will be very clear, this is not comic books for children. This is very much an adult comic book. So there's lots of very graphic violence, there's sex in it, depending on what you consider foul language. It definitely can fall into that category as well. And it is just a lot of fun, too. And to be able to read through this and pick out elements that they used in Season 1 is kind of fun. And I hear that there's a lot more from Omnibus Volume 1 that will be in Season 2. So this is a great place to get into The Boys if you want to see it the way it was originally written, and not just the way it's presented on Amazon Prime.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Atlee, your cool thing?
Well, I've got two, actually. The first one was Microsoft Flight Simulator. Hit over 1 million players in its first 2 weeks of launch. And Ewan and I were talking about it a bit before we started the show. and it, the graphics in it are stunning. It's long been held an industry standard as far as flight simulators and how realistic it is, and how well it does in the graphics and the interaction between the different planes and the number of different planes that are available. As far as these games go, as far as simulation games go, it's considered to be one of the top. And they waited a long time before they did this current one, and it's apparently amazing. I'm actually just getting it downloaded now.
And the second one?
The second one is the Surface Duo is being released on the 10th of September. So it's only available in the U.S. It is, I think it's got some technical issues as far as not having NFC, which is kind of strange for a device this day and age. The battery life, I'm curious to see what the battery life is going to be because it's ridiculously thin. If you hold the Samsung Z Flip open, the Surface Duo closed is as thick as the Flip is open, or the Z Fold is open. So it's ridiculously thin, so I'm curious to see what the battery life's going to be on that. And the screen technology looks like it's quite nice. It's quite interesting scale and style, so I'm curious to see sort of the workability and how it'll work.
Right, someone, who's opened the door next to a road?
Not to me.
No, okay.
That won't be me.
Oh, right, okay. Is it getting a bit warm there?
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. Patrice, your turn for the cool thing.
Okay, my cool thing is also a TV show. Kind of funny that Jeff picked something too. It's Star Trek Lower Decks. Unfortunately, as of today, at least, only as far as I can see, only available in the US. I think it should very soon come to other countries. So it's only on CBS All Access right now, but usually you see it, CBS works with Amazon or with Netflix. It's basically a new animated Star Trek show, but the funny thing, or the fun thing is, it's like a comedy show. Like, it's not overly, like, totally crazy comedy. It's really like a good animated comedy show. And it's also, it's not like the prime crew. Like, it's not like a Kirk or Picard type crew. No, it's like the lower deck.
It's
like
the extras.
The extras, mm-hmm. Yeah. The second, like, what was it? The not the first contact crew, but the second contact crew. Mm-hmm. So the first two episodes were a little rough, I have to say. But then from episode 3 onwards so far, it has been really, really, really good. It's funny. The characters are really great. Like, they picked some really good characters. It takes advantage of the animation, so the aliens are actually aliens. Like, I think they had like little pigs as aliens and stuff, like, or like pig-like looking creatures, yeah. and like big space spiders or like and stuff like that. So it's just a good show. And I'm usually not into animated stuff, but I love Star Trek, and Lower Decks is just really good.
Excellent.
I am loving Lower Decks as well. It is absolutely wonderful.
How long are the episodes?
They're like 25 minutes.
Yeah, something like that.
So it's very like the old original animated series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yes. 25, 28 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying there's got to be a new season of The Orville due out soon? Because they must have recorded that before COVID slammed.
Actually, I don't know if they've announced an official launch date.
They recorded part of it, but not all of it.
Mm. That'd be bad, yeah, if it doesn't come.
But there's definitely a new Star Trek Discovery coming. That is already announced in like mid-October, I think.
Yes, I think you're right. Mid-October.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I just realized it's Thursday. Patrice, that means that there is a new episode of Lower Decks out.
I've already watched it.
And tomorrow morning,
ahead of me,
I'll be watching the next episode of Ted Lasso.
Yes.
God, I love that show.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah. Howard, have you got a cool thing for us, girl?
I do. I have put it in Slack, in the green room.
That was almost
Nintendo.
My pick.
Nintendo. That was almost yours, was it, Jeff?
Yes.
Nintendo's releasing its 35th anniversary. Yeah, this came up this morning, I think, or sometime today anyway. and it's retailing for about $49.99. So, what, £45 here? But they are releasing the original game in Watch as part of the anniversary. Around the 13th of November.
So this is fully playable, original game,
yeah.
Available 13th of November, and only £49.
Yeah, and I think it's three games that they're releasing with this. Yeah, Super Mario Brothers, The Lost Levels, and
limited,
what's the other one? I can't remember.
Limited production.
Yeah.
These will be four times the price the following day on eBay.
Well, this is what everybody's saying, that they're basically like keeping a watch out, just refreshing different pages, trying to find out where it's coming so they can just get it. Because it also has the watch as well, so you get the watch display on there too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I'm kind of glad that there's a limited supply, because that means I'm probably not going to get one, and I'm probably not going to be $50 light. As a result. Gosh, thanks now. My cool thing, I've done everyone's, haven't I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
My cool thing is super cool. It is a teleprompter kit. So you remember last week I said to you that I'd got an application that was called Teleprompter Pro. And I said it was a voice control teleprompter system. So you could just, Prompt Smart Pro, that was it. It's a voice-activated system, so you read out and it automatically advances and it, from your speech. And I used it this morning in a networking group where I had to read a bit out, and it worked flawlessly. It was absolutely beautiful. So after I got this thing and it worked and it was like, great, this has cost me $20 and it's a really, really good teleprompter, I went out and I bought myself a teleprompter kit. So in front of the camera now, I've adapted it so that it fits onto the old pole that I had, and then the camera sits behind that, and there's a sheet of glass in front, and my little 9-inch iPad is lying on the screen pointing up at it, and it runs beautifully. And the prompter kit that I bought allows you to flip it and reverse it so it runs upside down, and it is absolutely perfect. It is beautiful. It runs an absolute dream, and with the voice recognition, it's absolutely superb. What I need to do is figure out how to get the audio out of my camera directly into the unit, so that when I'm out on site, if people are mic'd up, then their mics can trigger it, because then it would work superbly on an iPad at distance. But this thing's the teleprompter by 11T. It comes with a NAP, and it comes with a remote control as well, so you can manually scroll. There's a bit of patchy reviews on whether the control works, but everyone says the app works fine on iPad, and the actual unit itself is extremely good as well. It's well built and it's lovely, and it's £69. I'd like to buy it, including VAT. Right, where can we get a hold of you, Bart?
You can find me at bartb.ie, where there's links to everything I get up to.
Excellent, mate. Don't leave it so long before you come back next. We missed you. Jeff, where would you be?
I am on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamm at both places. I'm here. I'll be back tomorrow for the Mac show. I do the podcast circuit. I get around. And very soon we'll have some episodes of that interview show live and on the internet.
If they did track and trace for podcast app, they'd never keep up with you.
No, I would be a super spreader.
Moving on. Atlee, where would you be?
You can reach me on the socials at Atlee Hunter, and my blog at atleehunter.com, and of course here.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. Patrice, you?
Yeah, as always, every week here on The Big Show, and tomorrow also on The Mac Show, as always. Everything I do on thepatrice.com, and my podcast is Foodie Flashback at foodieflashback.com.
Who's the next episode?
The next one should... Actually, I published Alistair. And the next one is Adam Christensen.
Oh, cool. That'd be good. Excellent.
Yeah, it will be amazing.
And last but by no means least, the ever lovely Howa.
I am on Twitter as Howie A, and you can find me in the BTN Slack room as well, and obviously on the Big Show.
And as always, Mrs., don't leave it too long next time, eh?
I will try not to.
Ali says you can't get that teleprompter here. You'll get something like that, or it might be phrased differently, but you can get it.
That brand just isn't here. It doesn't seem to be available here. So yeah.
There'll be one that'll be similar. Right, if you are using any of the links, then you can go to bridgetechnetwork.com/chat and you can find all of the story links and all of the cool thing links that are in there. Just navigate to the relevant day, 3rd of September today when we recorded, and you'll see them all. If you do use any of them, I strongly urge you please to go for our chosen charity and support them. Please go to smile.amazon.com or .co.uk and pick the charity Free At Last. They're a small charity here in Birmingham that look after underprivileged kids in the Neatchells area of Birmingham that have got a life expectancy which is significantly less than other areas of Birmingham that don't have the same level of congestion and issues with bad air quality. So that's Free At Last. Please look after them. And if you do that, please send a note to them telling them that you did it through BTN. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech. And if you'd like to listen to the news show, that's on every morning with Kyle. We pay him to do that, and he does 5 days a week on the news show. So enjoy that. Have a great weekend, and thanks, as always, for listening. Get me words out in the end, gee.